Off me block, book three, done and dusted, chapter eight. Sure, it's for me own good.
Ah, there you are, pal. Jesus, man, it's good to see you. What's it been? 3 months? Tommy and Gillian are ensconced at the bar in the hotel when we arrive on a Thursday evening. I've never seen him look so well. He's not only lost weight, but he's trim, buffed even. He's wearing a short-sleeved shirt, and as he extends his hand to me, I can't help but notice his newly sculpted musculature beneath his tanned skin. Tommy, you look great. Have you been hitting the gym? Yes, I have. I swim, I cycle and everything. Jesus, man, I'm even off the fags, and I've more or less knocked the gargle on the head. Just the odd glass of vino every now and then. Bleeding well, loving it, so I am. The transformation is incredible. I've seen Tommy looking both bad and good, but never as good as this. He looks like all of those years of heartache and hurt that he has so readily told me about had never happened. This is the Tommy Costello that should have been, had the fates been kinder to him. And I suppose, in a way, they have finally been good to him, in a roundabout sort of way. He's working, he's happy, and he's in love. What more could a man ask for? With the introductions out of the way, I tell him that we're going to get ourselves checked in and arrange to meet up with him for a drink in half an hour. "There's a nice little boozer just down the road," he says. "They serve a cracker of a pint, if you fancy to walk, like." "What's wrong with here?" I ask him. "Ah, it's a bit too fancy for me. Look at this shite," he says as he holds up his wine glass. "What?" "This," he says, thumbing at the white paper napkin that stuck to the bottom of his glass. "What's wrong with a fucking beer, man, for Jesus' sake? Too common for them." The pub was dark, small, and it smelled more than a little of spilled pints, and if the door to the toilets was held open just a little too long, the putrid smell of stale urine assaulted the senses. Foul smells aside, Tommy was in his element. "Do you want to grab a table?" I ask. "I'll order some drinks." "A table? Would you go and shite? I'm sitting at no table. What's wrong with sitting at the bar, for Jesus' sake, like a real man?"
"Fair enough," I answer. "When you know Tommy as well as I do, you learn to take the rough with the smooth and let any offence, intentional or not, slide. So how are things with you, Tommy?"
"Jesus, pal, come here till I tell you."
"It's only been 3 months, but I'm sure there's a lot to be told."
"When's the last time we seen you? May, wasn't it? Jesus, man, I haven't bleeding stopped. Don't get me wrong, I'm grateful for the gigs. I am, really I am. But I tell you what, I'm Jesus well knackered, and I can't wait for the few weeks off on the honeymoon. Well, that's if I get any time off from the other one. Love her as much as I do, she's a bleeding well freak when it comes to the healthy living, the eating and the exercise, like. Has me bleeding crucified, so she does. Jogging, swimming, cycling, salads, green smoothie shite for the brekkie, no fags, and a drop of red wine is all I get if I fancy a jar. Sure, Jesus, why do you think I wanted to come down here with you? So I could have a proper drink and the drag of a fag. That's why. Only bleeding gutting, so I am, and that red wine shite is doing me innards no favours, I can tell you that for nothing. Now, don't get the wrong idea about herself. I'm only mad about her, so I am. Head over heels. But loving fuck, she has me worn out with all this health malarkey. Wait till I tell you. We'd no sooner organised a few bits for the big day when she tells me that she thinks I could lose a few pounds. Fucking well call me Buddha Belly, so she did. She said it would do me no harm to go to a few spin classes with her in the run-up to the wedding. Said it would be good for me. Spin classes, says I. What in the name of Jesus are they when they're at home? Cycling, says she. Sure, why would I need classes? I've been riding bikes since I was a nipper. Don't they say you never forget? It's not like that, she says. Come with me tomorrow when you'll see. Loving Jesus, man, wait till I tell you. I went along to the classes with her the following morning, and such a bunch of spandex-loving fuckers I'd never met in all my life. And I'm only fucking hooring those electric bikes out of it like there was no tomorrow. Sweaty arses and mocha lattes everywhere, so there was. I reckon there was something wrong with my own bike, because I could barely get it going. It was like trying to cycle it up the side of Everest in 18th gear on a rusty racer, so it was. While all those other fuckers are baiting along with their legs going around like a cartoon blur. Fuck that for cheap chips. I was having none of it. So what do you think, says herself after we were finished. Ah, says I, it's not really for me, Petal. I prefer the real thing, you know, out in the open road, like, you know, nothing like that to get you back in proper shape. I left it at that, hoping for all the world that she'd cop on that it wasn't for me and I'd be done with it. Nope, not my Gillian. Determined as she was to see me get rid of the beer belly, she took me up at me word. I get up the following Sunday morning, stagger down the stairs ready to get the fry and a pot of tea on the go, and I find our good self standing in the kitchen with a pint of green muck in her hand. What's that, says myself, eyeing the glass. Breakfast, says she. Come on, get it down, you. It'll do you the power of good. It'll Jesus well kill me by the looks of it, says I. What is it? Spirulina, says she, as matter-of-factly as you like. As though I was supposed to know what that was. Spiro what, pet, says I. Spirulina, says herself again. It's an algae, very good for you. Full of vitamins, says she. Yeah, sour cornflakes, love, says I. I'm not drinking that fucking pond scum, so it is. Tommy, says she, come on, drink it. Then she gave me the look. Now, when Gillian gives you the look, you don't want to argue with her. She mastered that expression way back when we were only dating all those many moons ago. And I'll tell you now, when you see the look, you do what it tells you. I took the glass from her and had a look into it. Ah, Jesus, pet, says I. That's like something the Incredible Hulk would hock up of a morning. Drink it. Could I not just take a vitamin pill or something like that instead? Drink it. Well, man, I drank it. Sweet divine mother of the baby Jesus, it was like swallowing a pint of snot. I'd swear to God that me face turned inside out as I choked it down. Never in all me days have I ever let something so bleeding well gank past me lips. And it took ages to go down. Only dribbled down me food tube. Clung to me insides like snail slime, so it did. Needless to say, I spent the next 5 minutes dry retching around the kitchen while Gillian lectured me on the benefits of it. When I'd finally gotten control of me stomach, says herself to me, here, this is for you. She handed me a box with a big red bow on it. What's this, says I, it's not me birthday. Open it, says she. Well, course of fuck on it, man. I nearly got sick when I tore off the wrapping paper and looked inside. A cycling helmet, shorts and a top. What's these for, says I. Sure, I don't even have a bike, like. Yes, you do, says she, as she pulled back the blinds on the patio doors. Sure as shite, out on the deck and there was a brand new 21-speed racer. Well, course of fuck on it in anyways. Go on up and get into your gear, says she, and take it for a spin. Loving Jesus, man. When I took the shorts and top out of the box, I nearly took a stroke. Fucking spandex, so they were. Ah, here, pet, says I. Thanks and all in anyways, but I look like a fucking gobshite in these. No, you won't, says she. You look the part. You said you preferred the real deal. Yeah, but I was only. Only what, says she. Nothing, says I. Go on, put them on. Take it for a spin. I will after me brekkie, like. You just had your breakfast, says herself. No, I had a pint of Liffey scum is what I had. Can I not have a few sussies and a couple of rashers before I head out? No more fly-ups for you, Tommy Costello, says she. Your cholesterol's probably through the roof, and besides, you don't want to have a Buddha belly come the wedding now, do you? That look again. All right, says I. I went upstairs and got into me new clobber. Jesus, man, those shorts didn't half right the crack in me arse. And don't get me started on what they did to the old package. They flattened it out completely, so it did. It looked like a squashed hedgehog on the side of the road. Not a prick in sight. You look great, says herself when I finally came back downstairs. I look like Lance Armstrong got sick on me, says I. Don't be silly, says herself. Now go on, see how fast you can cycle up to the smelting tower and back. Are you bleeding mad or what, says I? That's a good 5 miles and it's all up hills for Jesus' sake. It'll do your ticker the power of good, says she. It'll put me in intensive fucking care is what it'll do. Go on, says she, away with you. Like I already said, man, love her as much as I do, and really I do, honestly, I swear to you, she can't half be persuasive when she throws those eyes on you. I trudged out to the bike, intent on cycling as far as the boozer, swamping a couple of points, and then making my way back again as though I'd done 2 stages of the Tour de France. Right, I looked like a fucking gobshite, no doubt about it, and I was sure I'd draw a smart remark or two down the pub, but Anton was better than a 5 mile cycle uphill. Oh, here, says Gillian, as I made me way out the back gate. She was coming down the back garden towards me with something in her hand. Here, take a selfie when you get up to the tower. I want to see that you really did it and didn't stop off anywhere for a point or two. Jesus, well, mind reader, so she is. I swear to you, there's no flies on her. Can't get away with anything, so I can't. I know it's for me own good and all, and it's nice to have someone looking out for me with nothing but good intentions and all, but still. What's this, says I. It's your new phone. That thing you have is a dinosaur, Tommy. Welcome to the 21st century. It was one of those fucking smartphones. Fucking huge, so it was. Oh, I've had smaller portable tellies in me time. Ah, Jesus, Pets is like, sure, where am I even going to put that, for God's sake? I'm barely stuffed into these myself as it is without trying to squeeze that in too. It's like a fucking fridge door, so it is. Here, says she as she spun me around, there's a pouch on the back of your top. Before I could say another word, she had it wedged in. Now, no stopping at the pub, and I want a selfie from you when you get to the tower. Sure, I wouldn't know how to work that thing, for God's sake, Gillian. It's all set up for you. All your numbers are in it. Take a picture, just press the blue button at the top, all right? All right, says I. No one better than to argue any further with her. I'm telling you now, man, that phone is like something out of fucking Star Trek or something. Oh, I still can't get the hang of it. It's like the cockpit of the space shuttle. There's that many bells and whistles on it. All I can do after 3 months with it is make calls. I can just about send a text message, and don't even ask me to try and go interwebbing on it or whatever you call it. A waste of good money if you ask me. Anyways, with me new phone, me new bike, and the spandex shorts only cutting the hole out of me, off I went. It wasn't bad at first. I got the hang of the gears fairly fast, and there was a little gizmo on the handlebars that told you how far you'd gone and what speed you were going like. I liked that, so I did. A little bit fancy, and you know what I mean. Yep, it was all grand till I got past the 5 arches and started going uphill. Loving Jesus, man, it was like trying to cycle up the side of Everest. That's how unfit I was. Me lungs were burning with the agony of it, and me legs felt like lead weights. Halfway up Puck's Lane, I had to get off and walk. I was bleeding mortal, so I was, when 2 young fellas on BMXs cycled past me with not a care in the world, and the 2 of them with nary a gear to change to make it easier for them. After what seemed a bleeding eternity, I finally made it up to that poxy tower. I was frozen, caked in muck up to me clackers, and me eyes were watering like I don't know what from the biting cold of the wind. I trundled across to the tower and took out that poxy fridge door of a phone to try and take the selfie to prove to her good self that I'd actually gone and done it. I was proud of myself, do you know that? Right, it was no marathon or anything like that, but for someone as lazy and unfit as myself to have actually made it all the way up there, walking, cycling, it didn't matter. The fact that I'd made it up and anyways, well, I was chuffed with myself, to tell you the truth. So you can only fucking imagine just how pissed off I was when I tried to work out how to take a selfie in front of the tower and found that I hadn't got a bog how to do it. After trying for 5 minutes or more, and after a good many fucks were thrown at it, I finally gave up and asked a young couple who were strolling by to take the photo for me. I have to admit it, in all fairness, and if I do say so myself, I only well looked the fucking bizzo in it. The gear looked a part of me, I'd a healthy flush in me cheeks, and if you didn't know me, you'd swear I'd been doing it for years. I remember thinking, Jesus, maybe this keep fit lark won't be so bad after all. And I remained in that frame of mind for all of 20 minutes. Me trip home was about to change me mind, and change it fast, pal. I wheeled the bike back down the mucky track from the smelter to Puck's Lane. There was no way I was going to cycle down that, I tell you. I'd have ended up with nothing but scrambled eggs for the bollocks. There I was, the bike in 21st gear, and I'm only hooring the pedals out of it, trying to go faster and faster. I was watching me little speedometer thing on the handlebars creep upwards. 30 mile an hour, 35, 40, 40 mile an hour, man. I couldn't believe it. With nothing but pedal power on a downhill run, I was loving it, so I was. The wind in me face, the air rushing past me ears, I'd never felt so free and excited in all my life. That's when I seen it. The tape on the handlebars had started to unravel, just on the right-hand side, right at the very end of the handlebar. It was just a little bit at first, and I remember thinking that I'd have to stick it with a bit of glue when I got home. But what with how fast I was going and all, sure in no time a good foot and a half of it had unraveled, and it was now dangling in the air as I tore down Puck's Lane. I was afraid that if it unwound anymore, it'd get caught up in the spokes, and that would be the end of me, pal. Now, I'm not thick, and even though I might not have had the best of educations, I've always had the smarts, you know what I mean? But what I did next, without equal or exception, was possibly the most stupid thing I've ever done in all my days, without even thinking about it. So afraid was I of that tape getting wound up in the spokes, I caught it with me right hand, wrapped it around me fist, and hoping to rip it off and throw it away, with all me might, I yanked it. Sweet divine suffering Jesus, the front wheel instantly turned perpendicular to me direction of travel, and off I sailed into the air like a spandex rocket. 40 bleeding mile an hour I was going. Now, as you might remember, this wasn't going to be my first time hitting the ground at 40 mile an hour. The incident with me roller skates and poor El Noah's Honda 50 was forefront of me mind as I sailed through the air, and I was determined in that heartbeat of terror that I wasn't going to go face first into the tarmac this time. I did me best to get me legs under me as I went, hoping against hope that I could land on me feet. Jesus, man, it felt like I was up there for hours, so it did. Everything was in slow motion. I remember seeing the ground getting closer to me, and I almost had me feet under me, and I'm thinking, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it. Well, I hit the ground just as I managed to get me feet under me, and as a consequence of that, I'm now staggering at 40 mile an hour. Usain Bolt would have been eating me dust, I can tell you. Well, I stumbled for all of 3 or 4 steps, and anyways, because that's all my little legs could manage before giving out on me. I went sprawling across the tarmac, me spandex ripping to flitters, and me hands and knees getting shredded by pebbles and bits of glass and what have you. By the time I came to a stop, I reckon I'd lost a good pound and a half of skin off of me hands. A 10-foot streak of blood and grizzle on the tarmac behind me could attest to that. I was in bits, and the bike had fared no better. In all the commotion, I'd never even seen it as it bounced and tumbled down the road beside me. It was nothing more than a mangled wreck wrapped up in the hedgerow. Even if there hadn't been a black on it, I wouldn't have got back up on it, so rattled was I. I staggered to the roadside, and after 10 minutes of wrangling with it, I managed to get Gillian on that poxy blower of mine and got her to come and collect me. Thanks be to Jesus, I'd no broken bones, and me choppers were all intact, but I'm telling you now, man, I wished for death as Gillian washed me gashes out with undiluted Dettol. Screamed like a babby, so I did when she lashed that stuff onto me. That was the end of the cycling, I can tell you that for nothing. But it was far from the end of Gillian trying to get me on the healthier side of things. As soon as I was able to, she had me back down at the gym doing all sorts of poxy things. Yoga! A load of me bollocks. Mind you, the queer ones and the yoga pants kept me going to that class for a while. And anyways, morning, noon and night she had me down there. Pilates, she had me at that too. Then it was back to the spin classes and swimming as well. Jesus, man, I felt like Daily Thompson. So many things was she signing me up for. Now, you know me. I love me fry-ups, me fags and me gargle. So this wasn't sitting well with me at all. In no way, shape or form. I was convinced she was going to fucking well kill me with all of it. Mind you, it's done the job. I've never felt fitter or looked better in all me days. But it was hard going, I tell you. I mean, I hadn't been in a gym since I was a nipper when, after getting a couple of hidings from a few of the boyos on the estate, Ronnie Trun, myself and one of the brothers into a boxing club down on the East Wall Road. You've got to admire him, huh? There he was, leathering the Jesus well shite out of me every other day, but he takes umbrage when someone else decided to have a go, and then he's all worried about his me ability to defend myself. Hypocritical fucker, the Lord have mercy on his soul. It was 2 days after me 8th birthday when Ronnie marched myself and Patsy down the banks of the Liffey to an old corrugated shed by the entrance to the port, the home of the SAABC, or the St. Augustine's Athletic Boxing Club, to give it its proper title. That it doubled as a playground for every psycho gurrier in the greater Dublin area didn't seem to bother any of the parents who trun their kids into it. They'd fucking willingly bring their own sprogs down there for these headcase fuckers to legally knock 7 shades of shite out of you just for the sport of it. Suffered in Jesus, I wasn't right for years after it. 3 times a week, Ronnie would walk us down there for us to be only bleeding well battered. Sparring, we were battered. The punch bag hooring back at you faster than you thought it could, battered. Skipping with rubber ropes whizzing around your bare legs at the speed of fucking sound, only to catch the back of your legs and rip the poxy flesh off you, battered. The speedball, now that was the worst. This wasn't one of those neat little things hanging from a wooden board that you see the likes of Ali or Joe Frazier happily thump away at on the telly and stuff. No, no. This was a ball about the size of a melon, and it was suspended at about shoulder height between the floor and ceiling on a huge pair of bungees that could have doubled for knicker elastic for Don French. Now, the purpose of this thing wasn't so much to help you with the speed of your jabs or anything like that. It was more to train you for the ducking and diving side of things. You see, you'd hit that thing a clatter and it would go flying off, only to Jesus well bounce back at you from another direction, and you'd have to try and stay out of the way of it while trying to hit it another smack. I was in the club about 4 or 5 weeks when my coach finally put me on the thing. I was nervous about it. But after a 20-minute session of the fucker, only Jays as well hopping an 8-pound medicine ball off of my stomach, I'd have done anything to get away from the agony of that. It started off handy enough. I hit it a hardish tap and off it went away from me and came back at me exactly from where I'd sent it to. Easy enough, I thought. After a little while, I was starting to get into it, dancing around on me tippy toes and hitting it a clatter each time it bounced back towards me. As me confidence grew, I started rightly laying into it, only knocking lumps out of it, so I was. I felt like the Bizzo. Jab, duck, jab, duck. I was deadly at it, if I may say so myself. After 10 minutes or so, I'm only flying around the place with it, and a few of the older lads have stopped what they're doing to have a gawk at me. That was me downfall. I didn't get cocky. I got nervous. Now, without you ever having even stepped into a ring, I'm sure that you know boxing is all about concentration, balance and poise, right? Well, with all those fuckers staring at me, all those things evaporated from me like spit on a hot griddle. In an effort to show off, I hit the thing an unmerciful clatter, and it shot off away from me like a fucking cannonball, only to bounce back at me at the same bleeding speed. Well, Jesus, man, it fucking hurtled me out of it, right in the puss. I saw stars. As if that wasn't bad enough, I went flying backwards, me feet in the air, only for me right leg to get tangled in the top bungee, and off I shot around and around in circles with no sign of the bleeding thing slowing down anytime soon, and all the gawkers breaking their shites laughing at me. I didn't know what hurt more, the smack to the kisser, having me leg almost torn from its socket, or the laughs and jeers of the assembled bowsies, the fuckers. And that wasn't the worst of it when it came to me far from distinguished career in pugilism, not by a country mile. After we'd been going there for a couple of months, and after she'd won a few bob on the sweeps, me poor old ma went and bought us tracksuits for the training, like, you know. They were only old pennies yokes, but ma said that they do the job. Patsy got his first, a nice black one with yellow stripes down the sides. Looked like Bruce Lee in it, so he did, the lucky fucker. Then she pulled mine out of the bag. "What's this, ma?" says I. "It's your tracksuit," says she. "Are you messing?" "No." "Why?" "It's fucking pink," says I. "Why can't I have a black one like Patsy's?" "After a mighty slap to me chops," says she, "they didn't have one in your size, and it's not pink, it's mauve." "Mauve? Mauve? What in the name of Jesus is mauve when it's a home, ma? That's Jesus, well, pink, ma." Another clatter, never even seen it coming. "It's a colour," says she, "a colour that's not pink, but mauve." I held the top up to have a look at it, and things just went from bad to worser. In bouncy, bubbly writing written across the chest of the thing was the word jogging. "I hear, ma, do you have a death wish for me or something? That's the gayest thing I've ever seen in me life. Fucking Liberace wouldn't be caught dead in it for Jesus." A succession of clatters to the side of me head and a dead arm for good measure. "Tommy Costello, mind your fucking language, you little pup, you." "But ma," says I through me whimpering, "it's pink and gay, and I'll get bleeding well battered if I go down to the box and wearing that, and that'll just be on the way, never mind when I get there." "You're wearing it," says she. "I spent good money on that, Tommy Costello. Now that's the end of it." And you know what? She only went and made me wear it the following Thursday night. Bet out the door in it, so I was. I clung to the newel post for dear life while Ronnie tried to drag me out the door by me ankles. Needless to say, I was ripped to shreds by anyone and everyone who laid eyes on me. So much so that Ronnie, the bollocks, made me walk a good 50 yards behind him, leaving me unprotected and open to the ridicule, and worse still, the bottles, cans and stones that were thrown at me as we made our way down the east wall. 8 fucking weeks I was made to wear that thing, until even Ronnie started to get tired of the slagging that I was getting and took pity on me. He made me ma bin it and get me one like Patsy's, but it was too late. The damage was fucking done. Scarred for life, so I was. Me stint in the boxing ended the following December, thanks be to Jesus. But believe me when I tell you that there was far nicer ways that it could have come about. It was a drizzly Sunday morning when once again Ronnie marched us down to the clubhouse. I was paired with a young fella from Pear Street for a bit of the sparring. He was nice enough lad, if I remember rightly, and he was smaller than me, so I wasn't really worried about getting into the ring with him. We did a couple of rounds before the poor fucker started to choke on his gum shields and had to stop. Jock Farrell had been reffing for us as we sparred, and as the poor young fella was carted out of the ring, myself and Jock started messing. Now, Jock was a legend in the club, a 265-pound super heavyweight made of nothing but big muscle and bad temper. He'd fought professionally a few times back in the 60s, but a fondness for the old Gargamels saw him knocked back down to amateur rank. Anyways, as I said, we started messing. I'm laying the jabs into him and he's not even budging an inch while he's just doing a bit of the old shadow boxing back at me, swinging full speed like, but way above me head to keep me out of harm's way. He's jeering me in a light-hearted way, mind you, but enough to get me goat up, and I'm only leathering into him. Sure, Jesus, I might as well have been punching a granite wall for all the good it was doing. Anyways, this is going on for a couple of minutes, and the two of us are buzzing off of each other, so we are. He's swinging away at the air, and I'm thumping his abdomen out of it with all my might. All's going grand, till I decided to jump up and try and land a jab to his jaw. Up I went, me arm drawn back and ready to hit him as hard as I possibly can, when next minute I sail right into the path of his punch, his fucking bare knuckle punch, I might add. Sweet divine mother of the suffering baby Jesus, it was like getting hit by a train. I'm telling you now, man, stars, fucking saw a galaxy, so I did. And thanks be to God, that's all I saw or felt. I woke up in the Mater Hospital the following morning, a fractured jaw, a black eye, and a nose that would have made Carl Malden's look like Michael Jackson's. And that was the end of me boxing career and any association with the inside of a gym until me lovely Jillian sailed back into me life. Yeah, man, like I said, this fitness game, it's not the most natural of things to me, but it's doing the bizzo if I was to be honest with you. Ah, yeah, Jillian, she's nothing but good for me. I'll tell you that for nothing. I still can't believe it. Me first mot, like, after all these years, after all the hassle, all the hurt, and here I am, marrying me sweetheart from all those years ago, the day after tomorrow. You never know what's around the corner, do you? She came back to me like, what are the chances? Now, don't get me wrong when I tell you this, mad about her so I am, over the moon and all, but, well, maybe it's just me, maybe it's just the way I am, but, well, women, they're a bit mad like, aren't they? In a good way, but mad all the same, if you know what I mean. Even if you're head over heels mad about her, even though you can't get enough of a woman, you'll just never fully understand her. We're just so different, us men and the ladies, like. They have their own way of doing things, their own way of looking at the world and dealing with whatever it might throw at them. Take my Jillian, for example. Do you know how she measures time? Jesus, I could let you guess from now till the rapture and you'll never get it. Bottles of fairy washing up liquid. Can you believe that? Fucking fairy, like. It was only in June that she says to me, Jesus, Tommy, the wedding's getting close, isn't it? Indeed it is, pet, says I. Indeed it is. Sure, it's only a bottle and a half away, says herself. What? Says I. The wedding. Sure, it'll be here before the next bottle after this is finished. Are you taking the piss, says I. I couldn't believe what she was saying to me. I said that the wedding, it'll be here, you know, well by the time this bottle's finished and we're about halfway through the next one. We'll be getting married, like. Yeah, about 2 months, says I. That's what I said, says she. And tell me, says I, breaking me shite laughing, how long is it till Christmas? 3.5 bottles, says she, without even thinking about it, as though it was the most normal thing in the world to say. Fucking mad, man, I'm telling you, deadly and all, but mad just the same. And another thing, now, my Jillian is the bravest soul I've ever met. Unflappable, so she is. Nothing would ever get her knickers in a twist. She makes me watch those horror movies, you know, the ghost ones, the possessions and all that, and there's not a batted eyelid in sight. They don't faze her at all. Whereas I'm watching them from behind the curtains with a cushion up to me face and a big light turned on. Only shitting myself and there's not a bother on her whatsoever. But introduce a spider into the equation and she's worth for nothing. Now I'm not talking tarantulas here or anything like that. I'm talking those little money spiders. They're enough to set her off. Jesus, she nearly well killed us one day because of one. We were driving down the M50, she's at the wheel, we're doing 75 and just past a red cow when the tiniest, and I mean the tiniest little spider, lowers itself down in front of her. Well, loving Jesus, you'd swear she'd come face to face with a funnel web the way she went on. Out of nowhere, she's screaming at the top of her lungs and the dozy mare is trying to dodge it by turning the steering wheel this way and that. How she didn't flip the car and kill us both, I'll never know. So you can imagine me lack of urgency when just a few weeks later, she starts screaming down the stairs at me to tell me that there's a spider in the bedroom. I sauntered up expecting to see nothing but a dot of a thing. I found herself out on the landing as white as a sheet and barely able to string a coherent sentence together. She pointed at the bedroom door. Pillow was all she managed to say. In I went, Tarzan to the rescue. Well, wait till I tell you, I nearly shit myself when I seen the size of the thing. This yoke was huge, so it was. Had fucking kneecaps and everything. And when it moved, you could hear the fucker's feet on the pillow. Now, spiders don't freak me out that much, but this thing was like something from Starship Troopers, for God's sake. Convinced that the fucker might leap at me at any second, I backed out of the room as slowly as I could. Did you get it, says herself. No, says I. Why not? Gillian Pett, says I, did you see me go in there with a bleeding cage, did you? That yoke's a monster, so it is. There's no way I'm... Tommy, you have to get it. And she was right. I had to get it. I just couldn't leave it there, sitting on me pillow like that. And what if it was preggers or something and hatched 100 more of the fuckers? I'll be back in a sec, says I, before going downstairs to get a few bits. I came up a few minutes later, a pair of oven gloves on me hands, a towel wrapped around me head and face in case the fucker leapt at me. I had the poker from the fire and a big old Tupperware dish that poor old Dimpna had bought years ago. You look like you're going to slay a dragon, says herself, with a bit of a smile. I said nothing. I just swallowed hard and went into the bedroom, pushing the door closed behind me so that the fucker couldn't escape. Would you believe me if I told you the bastard was gone? I had a look around the room, prodding at the duvet and the curtains with the poker, ready to do a legger if the fucker tore out at me from somewhere. But there was neither sight nor sound of him, thanks be to God. I turned to leave the room and near well shit myself when I did. There was the fucker, just sitting there on the carpet between me and the door. Now, I don't know if I imagined this or not, but till the day I popped me clogs, I'd swear the fucker was staring right at me. And if I moved to the right, that eight-legged little bastard did too. Did you get him? Shouts herself from the other side of the door. No, I fucking didn't, says I. He has me bleeding trapped, so he does. Just push the door open, pet, will you? I'm going to have to jump for it. Where is he? He's on the floor. He's blocking the door, the prick. Tommy Costello shouts herself, you must be mad if you think I'm opening this door while that yoke's on the loose. Just catch him and kill him, will you? Gillian Pett says, I can't just catch him or kill him. He knows what I'm up to. Little fucker staring at me right now, for Jesus' sake. Just throw the bowl over him. Trap him like. Easier said, Petal. What have I missed? Tommy, you have to get him, shouts herself. I know I do, but for Jesus' sake, Pet. Just throw the bowl, says herself. Just catch him. I thrown the bowl. I thrown it too far. It landed behind him, the rim of it coming down on his back legs, sending him scuttling towards me like hairy death. Across that bedroom floor I went like a whippet out of a trap, and that fucker only bleeding while tearing after me. I tried to make my way back to the bedroom door, but the fucker cornered me and convinced that he'd jump at me and tear up the leg of me trousers if I tried to jump over him. I was left with no other choice but to take desperate measures. I'm sure the neighbours got a great laugh of it when they seen me lunching from the bedroom window in a pair of oven gloves and with the towel wrapped around me head, but I didn't give a shite. Needless to say, the bedroom door was sealed shut with duct tape and we slept in the back bedroom for nearly a week till young Garrett and Neil tossed the room upside down and swore to us that there was not a trace of the fucker to be seen. Ah yeah, life with Gillian, man, it's far from dull. There's never a... Oh, come here. Wait till I tell you. Coming up on the next episode of Off Me Block, Book 3, Done and Dusted. Chapter 9, What Happens on a Stag. Now, I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't shitting myself about the whole thing. I'd been dreading it since myself and herself hooked back up. Meeting her kids and worrying about me stag night were keeping me awake at nights, I can tell you. Now that the stag was over, and I'll get to that in a minute, Jesus, well, farce that it was. But meeting her kids, I mean, what if they didn't like me? Or they didn't like me own kids? Or what if Safina, with that acid tongue of hers that she got from her mother, took a disliking to them and laid into them as we sat there over a leg of lamb? Or what if that gombeen prick of a son-in-law of mine went and opened his gobshite trap and said something stupid? Jesus, man, I couldn't sit right for the worrying.
Hello, it's Stephen Duffy here. Thanks for joining me on Off Me Block. As always, I hope that you're enjoying the show and that you'll join me next week for the next chapter in Tommy's story. You can subscribe to Off Me Block for free here on anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.